In the name of God, the Holy and Undivided Trinity. Amen. So today is the next to last Sunday in our liturgical year. The church's version of what, when I was growing up, we called New Year's Eve Eve. Next week we'll observe the Feast of Christ the King, and then it's on to Advent and a new liturgical year. We'll read mostly Matthew instead of Luke's Gospel we've been reading all year. So, what are Luke's almost final thoughts for the year, at least according to the framers of our lectionary? Well, they're not what I would have chosen. Bad things, earthquakes, great portents, wars and insurrections, and famines and plagues. The temple, utterly destroyed. The temple, the place where God dwells, reduced to rubble. And it gets worse. We only read through verse 19, but there's more dire predictions about how badly it will go, for instance, for those who are pregnant or nursing. And Jesus' disciples, of course, want to know, how will we know when this is happening? Maybe they want to get themselves or their families out of the way. Maybe they're scared out of their minds. Jesus doesn't tell them when. He cautions them not to be led astray by imposters. Don't follow those imposters. And he tells them not to be terrified. I don't know about you, but terrified sounds like a quite reasonable response to the awful things Jesus is describing. And it was awful. See, the Gospel of Luke was actually written quite a while after the crucifixion and after the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem by the Romans in 70 AD. By the time it was written down in the form we know it, the temple had been completely destroyed. Reports from the Times say the mule train of valuable goods taken back to Rome stretched for miles and miles. The building itself took a year and a half to take apart. When Rome destroyed things, they were very, very thorough. And you see, the important part is it wasn't just a building. It wasn't like a church or a cathedral. The temple was the place where Yahweh dwelt. It was the center of the world. Without a temple, sacrifices couldn't be made. No sin offerings, no thank offerings. Worship couldn't happen. It was a catastrophe of the largest magnitude imaginable. And Jesus said, "Do not be terrified." And then, if you can believe it, he goes on to say, essentially, "But wait, there's more. Before this horrible thing happens, y'all are going to be arrested and persecuted." Now remember, by the time that Luke writes his gospel and the companion volume of the book of Acts, these things have already begun to happen. So the description is pretty accurate. But then Jesus says something odd. "This will give you an opportunity to testify," says our translation. And the word translated here as testify could also be witness, or the same word as martyr. Great, an opportunity to testify. Then Jesus goes on to say something even stranger. "Make up your minds not to prepare your defense in advance, for I will give you words." Do not prepare your defense in advance. Now, in the world we live in now, it's become pretty clear that we don't communicate all that well. We have more channels of communication than ever, but we seem to converse at any substantial level almost exclusively with people who think like we do. When we say, for example, "I don't know how anyone could have voted for," we speak truth. Because, in fact, we don't know anyone who thinks that differently. Not anyone that we would have a serious conversation with. And when we do converse with those of very different experience and views, position or arguments. That's what happens when people are afraid or angry or feeling the loss of something they value. But it seems that everything is reduced to rubble, like the temple in Jerusalem. Now, as Christians, we make promises to proclaim by word and example the good news. But how are we to proclaim if no one's listening? Well, the first step might be to actually listen, to hear and understand, rather than to respond. And we might not like what we hear. But resisting the temptation to prepare a defense in advance and really deeply listening to our fellow humans' concerns and fears and hopes and dreams in order to understand. Read, mark, learn, and inwardly digest, perhaps, as our colleague has it. That might be the first step in our proclamation, our opportunity to testify to witness. And we might just find that the words that were given, rather than the ones we've prepared, are a surprise even to ourselves. The former Archbishop of Canterbury, Erwin Williams, in a rather obscure speech, once wrote one piece of this. He wrote, "We shall not proclaim Christ effectively if we are constantly reverting to what makes us anxious rather than what makes us grateful. God grant us the grace and power to proclaim by word and example the good news to all people, not just to those with whom we are."